Welcome to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers here live at Katerina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. It's okay for the crowd to clap. Go right ahead. There you go. As I mentioned before we got started, we like people to talk, to drink, and to dance if they feel like it. I don't know how much dancing they're going to want to do while we're talking, John, but sometimes you get that here at Katerina's. You never know. We record here every Tuesday night live, and of course you can listen to this and all the other podcasts on chicagojazz.com, but also live on WDCB on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. So I'm joined tonight as our special guest, actually taking up the entire hour because I thought that we would have plenty to talk about, and then also the group is going to be performing afterwards. John Mulder, how are you, John?
Great, Mike. Great to be here.
Yeah. No, thanks for coming in. Of course, we featured you on the January-February issue
Indeed.
Of Chicago Jazz Magazine, and you have a lot of different things that we should talk about tonight. One in being in the Chi-Town Jazz Fest, which comes up every March.
Right.
And you've got some gigs coming up, but just for some of our listeners and some of the people here, before we even get into all of that, why don't we talk a little bit about your background? Now, you're a guitar player.
That's right.
And I think of you, I mean, as a guitar player who plays straight ahead stuff, fusion stuff, a mixture of Latin, everything else.
Yeah.
What were your influences growing up that kind of gave you the diversity of all of that?
Yeah. Well, I think it's probably similar to a lot of us in the sense that, you know, we grow up listening to a lot of popular music. So that's there from the beginning, you know. And then afterwards, I began to get into jazz probably in high school. First starting to listen to some straight ahead players. You know, George Benson was really big when I was in high school. And through him, went back to some of the greats like Wes Montgomery and so forth. But also at that time, there was an explosion of, you know, jazz fusion going on and all sorts of modern players. So it was, I think, primarily the reason I have a couple of things. One is, you know, for the broad background, is that it was all happening at the time that I was, like, in high school and
college. Yeah, because there was right around the time where you still had a lot of the straight-ahead stuff happening, but the fusion stuff was happening, and the rock was obviously really exploding as well.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's kind of an interesting musical time.
It is, and guitar had a role to play in all of it. And on top of that, the Brazilian music, you know, and Latin music always intrigued me. And, of course, their guitar plays a strong role. So part of it was that there was so much of varied types of music that were really beginning to flourish and, you know, have a certain kind of day in the sun. But the other thing is that I think just as I grew as a musician and in becoming a professional musician, began to work in those areas a lot. It was called out of me. So, I mean, I'd certainly played a lot of gigs where I was playing straight-ahead jazz, but then, say, for example, something like Paul Wertico's group, which was very, he really wanted, you know, to go in a very fusion-oriented direction, called that out of me more than, you know, what maybe I had at the initial, you know, outset. So things like that, and then, you know, working with Latin groups or in Brazilian situations helped to kind of get my chops up in those areas.
Well, you know, talking about guitar, and I think guitar is, I think it's similar to drum set.
Yeah.
In that, of course, the people that are listening have heard me talk about it. I play drum set, obviously. But I think, you know, it's the crossover stuff where if you're playing straight ahead jazz and you get into a fusion thing or you get into a rock band thing, I mean, that stuff, to me, opens up your mind if you're playing rock and gives you a lot more creativity, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, like in some instances, okay, I play straight ahead jazz saxophone. It might be difficult for me to get that bluesy sound because I'm thinking a different way, but with guitar, it almost seems like it's easier to fall into the different styles. Is that true?
I think it can, and there's been some you know, players that have definitely done that, that have paved the way for kind of bridging a bunch of styles, even in the midst of playing perhaps straight ahead. So, I mean, I definitely have a strong love and appreciation for, let's say, those guitarists that pretty much stick to, you know, a more straight ahead kind of direction and format, and really adhere to that, and do it with a, you know, a lot of grace and so forth. That's a beautiful thing. So I love that. But I think, you know, my path has definitely been to incorporate a number of those elements into my music. And then, of course, the aspect of composing, you know, you're doing your own original material, and it's kind of open territory where you want to really pursue, you know, what kind of stylistically how you want to go. Mm-hmm. So that's something I really enjoy a lot, and has maybe helped create, you know, the the various elements within my style.
Yeah. I mean, you have a very unique style, and of course, as our listeners are listening later on, they hear your group, they're going to notice. And I think that's something that every musician obviously tries to get to, is their own sound.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and when you were growing up, was that something that you consciously thought about, whether it was in high school or after high school? I mean, like really developing your own sound, is that something that you, you know, strive for?
Really worked at? Well, one of the things that's interesting, there's a friend of mine who's a guitar player, Stevie Astro, and he knew me when I was in high school. In fact, he introduced me to one of his teachers that was initially got me into jazz. And he always tells me that he can hear some elements of the way I play now, or, you know, from like way back then. Like certain things that I, devices maybe I went to, I don't know whether it's a kind of like playing a certain triplets or way of phrasing, that type of thing. But I always found that kind of intriguing because, you know, I mean, he was there, you know, 35 years ago, listening to me in the hallways, you know, of school, and you know, if he says, "Wow, you know, I can still hear some elements," and I, well, I'd like to think I've grown some also then too, you know, but anyway, so there could have been that from the start. I don't know how conscious it was. I think I always tell my students to just listen for what you love in music and in other people, whether it's guitar players or other types of instruments, and, you know, see what you can do to incorporate that into your sound. And I think if you have enough different influences, they start to come together, and then it gets mixed with you, with your particular technique, with your particular way of approaching the instrument and the music. And it'll start to come out in its own unique way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? This would probably be a great time to jump over.
Okay.
And listen to you guys play a tune.
Terrific.
And then we'll come back and talk a little bit more with John Mulder here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB, and ChicagoJazz.com. Support for WDCB and Chicago Jazz Revealed comes from the University of Chicago Presents, announcing its new series, Jazz at the Logan, at the Rava and David Logan Center for the Arts in Hyde Park. The season opens on October 25th with The Bad Plus and continues with Annette Cohen, Dick Hyman, Bill Charlop, and others. Single ticket and subscription information at chicagopresents.u, chicago.edu. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed on 90.9 FM. Of course, I'm Mike Jeffers, and we are live at Katerina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. We just heard John Mulder's quartet, and we're back here with John for a little bit longer here, doing a kind of jumping back and forth with tunes and an interview. This is kind of a loose setup. I don't know if you noticed this yet or not.
I'm
John,
enjoying it.
you know, notice the pages of notes I have over here.
I know.
I'm ready to grill you.
Very prepared.
I always tell people I had to talk to somebody on the phone. I'm like, guys, you know, it's all right, because after I saw the background check that I ran on you, I decided not to ask all those questions.
Oh, okay.
So we were talking a little bit before you went up and played about, you know, developing your sound and, mm-hmm. and everything. Now, did you grow up in the Chicagoland area?
Northern suburbs.
Northern suburbs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So originally Lake Bluff, and pretty much was there most of my childhood, and then most of my adult life's been in Chicago.
Okay. Yeah. So when you were growing up, did you go downtown? Who were your influences around Chicago? Maybe go to the Jazz Showcase, things like that?
You know, in high school, not so much. I mean, if there was an occasional, I'll tell you a couple of things. We used to go down to Amazing Grace, okay, which was in Evanston, and which was a phenomenal club. A lot of people still mourn the loss of that place, although the current club there now, Space, is, I think, kind of...
Oh, that's where Space is. That's the same area.
You know,
right there?
I don't know if it was exactly the same area, but I think they're trying to do somewhat of, okay, a similar thing. And at that time, it was just hitting it at the right time where they had people like, you know, Keith Jarrett there playing solo piano,
wow,
or, you know, Chick Corea. I mean, they hadn't gotten to the level of,
yeah,
you know, popularity that they are now, where they'd be playing at Symphony Center or something. But and, you know, Gary Burton's band with, like, Mick Goodrick, or, like, Pat Metheny was in there with his early group. So
yeah,
it was kind of an exciting time because there was a lot of great music going on. And so that would be a place that, you know, I was able to go and check out what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be tough, too. And you teach and you have students, and it's got to,
yeah,
be difficult. Well, I guess it's a lot easier now because they can just go on YouTube. But actually to get out and see people play, when you're under 21, the choices are limited.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
to get out and about and stuff.
I know. And I still try to get people to go out and do it. I mean, there are places, of course, the Showcase lets people in,
mm-hmm,
you know, certain times that are underage. Certainly Andy's, if you're there to have, you know, dinner. I'm not sure about Katarina's here, but, you know, but there's a variety, I think, of places that, you know, where you can find some opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, you know, kind of leading into the next question, how important do you think it is for... Well, even, you know, professional musicians like,
yeah,
yourself, to get inspiration to go out and see that live music and see it rather than just watching it on YouTube or experiencing it just by listening to it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I can say that one of, if you want to call it, I guess, kind of an addiction for me is YouTube. Occasionally, like once I get on, you know, I'll be looking for like someone like Woody Shaw and just like going through all these different videos,
yeah,
or something,
yeah,
you know, all of a sudden a certain artist will pique my interest and I'm gone for like a couple, you know, hours. So that's how I usually don't get so much sleep sometimes. But otherwise... But there's something really cool about that because I'm able to see things like that I never was able to see.
Yeah.
So I love to tell students to do that because I think there's something really to be gained from that. Nevertheless, there's nothing like going to see a live performance, and I'm thrilled by it. I love to do it. You see people negotiate the music in a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the things with, you know, with YouTube, I mean, the camera's on a certain artist and, you know, but that's their selection of who they're honing in on. And, you know, when you're at a live performance, you know, like, for example, if you're a drummer, I mean, you can be looking at the drummer and really seeing how they're,
right, yep,
negotiating the playing situation. I can with guitar, whatever instrument that's, you know, happens to be of interest. So, I mean, I think there's that from an educational point of view, but then also just the power and the engagement of being there live. I think there's something that's kind of intangible, but nevertheless really important.
Yeah.
And what keeps me so interested in music. So
yeah,
I try to get out as much as I can.
Well, so you're through high school, and then did you pursue music in college, or how did your path kind of lead you?
Oddly enough, partly because of the ministerial side of things in my interests, some of my degrees, in fact, many of them were oriented that way. So, like,
we should talk a little bit because
a lot
of people don't know you're also a Catholic priest.
Yeah, right.
And so is that your day job, or is music your day job?
It's a pretty full-time job. And but it's something that I've found a way to do. I guess it's kind of unique in the sense of, you know, marrying that with the life of a jazz musician,
right, yeah,
in part, you know. So, but it's happened to work really pretty nicely. And, of course, one of the things that I do In terms of ministry, is I'm an arts chaplain, and so I work for the Archdiocese in areas of the arts and promoting that and kind of cultivating that relationship between the world of art and, you know, the world of religion and so forth.
So, like after high school, you ended up going towards the ministry side of it, but it wasn't music-based?
To some extent, yeah, and I was always playing music, so and quite a bit of it. I got my undergraduate degrees in psychology, but I was working on music.
Were you studying with somebody constantly, or what?
I did. I studied through high school a lot with a certain teacher, and then throughout college, it was a lot of my own study, but I also there was a great bass player who kind of directed a lot of jazz ensembles that I ended up playing and doing a lot of duos with, and he was really kind of a mentor for a while, Lex Falk, and then I went out to Boston for a little while in between getting a undergraduate degree and then going for a master's in theology and that kind of thing. And so I studied out there with a guy, Randy Roos, who is really influenced a lot by Mick Goodrick and that whole school of thought. It's kind of a Boston-based way of approaching the guitar, which I really valued and I learned a lot from. So that was a real good injection of a lot of material that I unpacked over the course of several years. But then later on went back to Northwestern and that was for a master's in music, but primarily to do arranging and to study things like that, and also jazz pedagogy, which has of course helped in terms of some of my positions in teaching and so forth.
Yeah. So with the arts ministry.
Yeah.
Or what's the official? Is that what it is? The arts ministry.
Yeah. It is.
I mean,
is that
something that by getting your master's in music, it really helped you kind of push that even forward?
Well, I think that certainly that contributed. I think it was that at the time when we started to develop it, I had already done a considerable amount as in playing in the jazz world.
Yeah.
And so both tracks were pretty, up and running. And so on a personal level, of course, it worked great to bring those worlds together in this fashion. But on a, just in terms of how both areas had developed, it was a ripe time for me to kind of put them in sync. So we started to talk about how, the church has been throughout the centuries a great supporter of artists, and there's the ties between artists and of course, and religion have unraveled to some extent, I guess you could say.
When you think about medieval times, and I mean they really.
They're great patrons of the arts.
Yeah.
I know. And so the idea was that with myself being an artist, that I already was a natural bridge between those two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me to be both working a lot as an artist, which I already had been doing, but then being able to reach out to that world was kind of a nice combination of my interests and backgrounds.
What does it entail? I mean, are you throughout the entire archdiocese? You're the person running this? Are you going into different areas?
I am, and so there's been different things that have taken place with that ministry, but one kind of most notable one in terms of the jazz world has been this jazz festival that I have directed each year, and that seems to be growing every year. It's in its fifth year, called the Chi-Town Jazz Festival, and so that's been a way in which we're raising money for hunger relief in Chicago, but the cool thing about it is all the musicians and the venues are coming together for that purpose.
Right.
So in a sense, I look at it as through their charity, through their, can call it ministry in a way, they're helping to you know, raise funds for something that I think is, you know, and we all think, I think, is really important in Chicago. So it's a cool way of combining the arts and kind of social welfare.
Now that, and the Chi-Town Jazz Fest, and we got to have you back on as we get closer to that.
Cause I'd love it.
That's in March, right?
Yeah, it's this year it's going to be March 6th to the 13th.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that actually, for those listeners that aren't familiar with it or maybe have heard a little bit about it, basically what it is there's sets at Andy's, at Jazz Showcase, at Green Mill, at sometimes at Symphony Center, they chip in, Space, things like that. And you run around and play at every single one of them.
It feels that way.
Yeah. I don't know how you do that.
Some years more than others. And, you know, this year I'm trying to figure out how that's all going to go. So I really try to just have, get the other bands in terms of, you know, to play. But there, I think last year I might have played at Shield Center, which is, you know, that's a place that I also minister at.
Okay.
And then Jazz Showcase. But you're right. I've played at the Green Mill and then done some stuff at Andy's.
Yeah.
So depending on the band, and sometimes because the musicians are donating their time, they'll say, well, you want to sit in with us or this or that. And, of course, right. I'd love to. Well, so, yeah, it's a lot of fun. But it does make it a little crazy sometimes.
But all the proceeds go to what's the cause?
It's, both Care for Real, which is in Edgewater, and they serve, thousands and thousands of people on the north side of Chicago. And then Catholic Charities, which, you know, is probably in the close to the millions in terms of amount of meals that they serve a year. Yeah, so it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So it's those two are currently the beneficiaries of it.
So now if somebody wants to get more information on that, what's the website? Just even now so they can kind of start getting warmed up
Of course. It's www.chitownjazzfestival.org.
Okay, chitownjazzfestival.org.
That's it.
And the fest is March 6th through?
The 13th.
The 13th.
Yep.
And, of course, we'll have information on WDCB.org.
Oh, yeah.
And ChicagoJazz.com about that.
Sure.
Well, why don't we have you jump back up with the band?
Okay.
And we'll play another tune, and then we'll come back and finish this up with John Mulder.
Beautiful.
Here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB, and ChicagoJazz.com. Wasn't that a great tune? Everybody loved it, didn't they? Yeah, let's hear it. Oh, man. It's the magic of radio. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed, live from Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. I'm Mike Jeffers, and we are going to spend a few more minutes here with John Mulder. So we've talked about the Chi-Town Jazz Fest. We've talked about your ministry and all of the great things you're doing here in Chicago. But why don't we talk a little bit about some of the gigs you have coming up and some of your recordings that you've done, because you've got national acclaim on several of the recordings. And why don't we talk a little bit about what was the – you've got so many of them. What was the last one that really came out that kind of hit the charts? Yeah.
Well, the last CD that I put out was a live CD from the Green Mill.
Right.
And that was kind of unexpected, to be honest. A guy who's an engineer, Ken Christensen, I was just doing a weekend with my quintet there, and he called and said, hey, John, you know, I'm coming to your show. You mind if I set up some mics and record? And he's done that before.
Yeah.
And with a lot of mixed results, sometimes in the Green Mill – especially because he was doing stereo miking at the time, one instrument would dominate or whatever. So
right.
It usually wasn't, something that would be fit for a CD. Well, I showed up, and he had all sorts of, individual miking for this, all
of a sudden. He actually, mic'd it down and ran it.
Right, right. And, I guess he had just, the stereo mics pretty much over the drums, but there was the mic for the bass, mic for the guitar, stereo mics for the piano. So all of a sudden we had a lot more ability to, mix the project. There was certainly a lot of bleed through and so forth.
Sure.
But, even then I wasn't really thinking that this was a record. And so probably that was better because I wasn't
Right.
You know, so
you were just
self-conscious.
Like, okay, well, whatever. We'll see what happens here.
Right,
whatever.
Let's just play and so forth. And then he decided, he said, you know, why don't I just come tomorrow night, which ended up really being, you know, a good thing because we took some cuts from Saturday night. And but not knowing, of course, that that was going to happen. And it wasn't until maybe about a month afterwards that the Jim Trompeter and I got together, and Jim was really emphatic that he said, oh, man, he goes, there's, you know, you got to really think about putting this out, you know, and so forth. So we began to listen, did some editing, and, you know, of like 25-minute tunes, making them,
perfect,
you know.
Perfect for radio,
not
right?
Perfect radio play, right. Bring them down to 9 minutes or something like that. So, but anyway, that was the last record, and I was really, really pleased we could do it. And, of course, at the Green Mill, which is, you know, one of my favorite places to be in play. So I couldn't have thought of a nicer.
Do you like,
you know,
do you like live recording as opposed to being in the studio, or each one has its place?
I kind of feel each one has its place. I was glad. I always wanted to do a live record, so I'm glad that this happened. But I also like the precision, and especially for certain things, like, say, for instance, acoustic guitar stuff that I do. I mean, you can get just such beautiful sounds when you're in the studio that are more difficult to capture live. So there's some real benefits to it that way. So, but I love the energy. I mean, you can hear that on the live recording. That comes from that too. So maybe a mix of both.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the energy wise, it's hard to replicate the energy that you have live on stage in a studio.
Yeah,
you know,
it can. Yeah, it really can. I think one of the things, and of course, some of the players that I've played with, one being Paul Wertico. I mean, we've played a lot together that we can almost like envision what it's going to sound like, you know, if we were live, and we kind of try to translate that into the studio, whether we're playing together in the studio for it or not. So that has kind of helped if you kind of know what's going to be around you and how the interplay, you know, can go.
Yeah.
But your point is well taken that there's nothing like live music.
Yeah. Now you've been playing, speaking of Paul Wertico, I mean, you've been playing with Paul for how many years now? I mean, that's...
Yeah, over 20 years. Maybe 20 to 25 years.
And would you say he's probably somebody that... Because every time I talk to Paul, it's like, well, John Mulder's in my band. You know, that's the deal. So, I mean, is that you guys are kind of like the core of his projects, it seems.
Yeah, that's been the way it's been for quite some time. Now, you know, Paul does a ton of projects. And so there's other, you know, a great many things he's involved with. But, for a long time it was a trio with Eric Hochberg, and then Brian Peters was in it. And then we had the Mid-East-Midwest Alliance, and I was kind of a part of that. So, Paul has a bunch of creative endeavors. So
he's always got something wild going on.
Oh, yeah.
But you guys have toured, too, right, with Paul. Now, Paul Wertico, for the people that are listening and don't know, Paul Wertico is, what, seven Grammy Awards with Pat Metheny. Mm-hmm. He's toured all over the world. He's played with a lot of different artists that everybody would know names of and things, but he calls Chicago his home, and he's a very creative person, as you are. So it seems like the two of you melding together would be the perfect. That's probably why you've been playing for over 20 years together.
Oh, I so enjoy it. Yeah, I mean, he's such a creative spirit, and you know, it's really been a great experience, to creatively. And I think in terms of language and phrasing and stuff like that, it just feels, it's always felt really very natural to play with them. So I think that's, you know, I've had the good fortune of being in his groups, and I've, you know, enjoyed having him in mine in a lot of different capacities. So it's been fun. I mean, it's, you know, a creative, sometimes you have these certain relationships creatively that develop that are really, I mean, they're so important, and there's a kind of a language that develops. So I felt that with Paul. I felt it with people like, you know, Jim Trompeter, who's played my music for a long time, and then some bass players too, you know, Larry Gray and Eric Hochberg and stuff like that. Those guys, they have delved in deep to what I do.
That's got to be really important, just kind of coming all the way full circle to the composition part.
Yeah.
When you bring something in and you know that, well, like for an example, you know, okay, you didn't just hire three guys to come in and play your tunes and you're going to tell them exactly what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are all kind of on the same level and they're getting inside your compositions just like you got inside your compositions, but maybe from a different angle.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's got to be really important in order to, you know, create what you want to have created.
It is. Yeah. Because It's people really getting inside what you're trying to do as a composer, who really have a feel for the direction of your music and almost like, you know, speaking the same language. And so there's something that's irreplaceable about having that. So,
well, so now speaking of getting inside of your compositions and everything else, you've got a couple of shows coming up.
That's right.
November 8th at Austin Town Hall, which is at 5610 West Lake Street in Chicago.
That's right.
And that's the John Mulder Sextet. And this is going to be different than what they've heard tonight.
Sure.
And then is it going to be the same sextet the next night at the Green Mill?
It is, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the sextet. What kind of stuff?
So that's somewhat of a unique project. And I put together a proposal for a concert with the Jazz Institute. And the idea was that it would be something different than, you know, my usual group, but that would blend perhaps a couple of different generations of musicians as well as some guest artists from out of town.
Yeah.
So it's going to be somewhat of a unique mix. There's people like Marquise Hill, who's, young, marvelous trumpet player here in Chicago, who will be on that gig. I guess Eric Hochberg and I are of the other generation. That would be
the more mature generation.
Yeah, there you go. Right. And then our out of town guests are Donnie McCaslin from New York, great saxophone player, and marvelous piano player Bill Carruthers, who's coming from, who used to be in New York, now he's in Michigan.
Okay. Now, are these all your compositions, or you're kind of playing a mixture of everything?
These are new compositions that I've been working on.
Okay.
And it's going to all come together. And what I've been entitled as is Earthborn Tales of Soul and Spirit. And basically, all the pieces are inspired by some moment, in my life, and or various moments. And that really conveyed a sense of either, a spiritual sense or a soulful sense to it. But I called it Earthborn because I didn't want it to come across too lofty, maybe.
Right.
Want to hear, like, right here, planet in the earth, But, talking about those various things.
So it sounds like there's going to be an album coming out at some point.
I hope that happens. I don't have any immediate plans as yet. I kind of want to really just play the music in a number of different situations and get a feel for what's really working with it and then go from there and kind of make the decisions from there.
Well, so that's going to be November 8th, 7 p.m. at Austin Town Hall. Where's Austin Town? I haven't even heard of Austin Town Hall. Is that a new venue? Or?
Apparently the Jazz Institute has had some concerts out there.
Oh, cool.
Lauren Deutsch has told me that it's actually a very beautiful hall and has a really nice piano. So I'm looking forward to that aspect of it. I have not played there, so
That's a new venue to me. So that sounds pretty interesting. So November 8th, 7 p.m., and then the same group at the Green Mill, which is 4802 North Broadway in Chicago at 8 p.m. on November 9th, the following night, the John Mulder Sextet. And, of course, they can get even more information at johnmulder.com. They can probably purchase CDs and find out where you're playing and read more information about you and all of that good stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. I'm going to let you guys go back up and play some more tunes for us.
Mike, thanks so much.
John, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And, of course, why don't we have you play some more tunes, and then I'll say goodbye later on.
Sounds great.
Okay, thanks, John. Support for Chicago. Thanks again to our sponsor, University of Chicago Presents, and, of course, Caterina's. Tonight's show, but with extended interviews, is available on podcast at chicagojazz.com. Until then, good night.